universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Well, hello everybody, I'm Sylvie Avery and welcome to Spirits Work, the show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death and life in other dimensions. Each week through our connection with our spirit friends, we discuss topics of interest and take great pleasure in listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us. In a most natural way, we are able to cross the divide between our physical world and the non-physical world when my husband Mick deep trance channels an enlightened spirit guide called Gregory Hay, who has access to great knowledge and wisdom. And this week's show is going to be another chance to initiate some new thoughts and maybe questions upon your lovely minds. And if you'd like to join us with a question relating to, well, really general questions, but obviously life, the universe and everything. So it's not a personal reading style situation, obviously, something that everybody can enjoy. The phone lines are open and it's toll free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers is 001-530-876-3222.
Well, hi, I'm Mick Avery. Welcome to Spirits Work, live on bbsradio.com every Sunday at 10 a.m. PST, which is 1 p.m. EST and 6 p.m. GMT. Now, if you'd like to know more about us, our books, our CDs, book an Akashic reading, please go visit our websites, which are at www.spirit-teaching.com, www.spiritsworkradio.com, and now, for those in Europe, www.mickavery.com. Now, what we're able to do as spirit mediums is to offer you the spirit world's perspective on the nature of our existence. And when I go into the deep trance state, Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for an educational group in the spirit world called the White Cloud Group, will borrow my body for the whole of the show. I won't know about anything else that happens because my spirit and my consciousness are transported to somewhere else. Please do look at our websites for a better understanding of how we work because we haven't got too much time to go through all the chit-chat and information we have really to offer you at the beginning of each show, because then it would take up way too much valuable time, which we actually like to leave everything over to Spirit and Sylvie. So I'm going to say goodbye for this week, and that's my bit for... That's all I have to do, so goodbye.
Goodbye, Nick. Yes, the thing is, as well, today's show is listeners' questions. Also, what you can do is email me at any time during the week. We're going to do listeners' questions for a couple of weeks now. If you email me a question at enq@spirit-teaching.com, I will read it out for you. Or if you have a suggestion for a show topic or something like that, then we can do questions around that. And if you've got any questions, but then fabulous. As I've said before, the spirit world don't want to just come and preach to us. They want to tell us, bring us information that our questioning minds want to know. So please do bear that in mind, because not everybody likes using the telephone, and because of the time differences and everything, email sometimes is the best way. So Gregory, who will be with us any second, had an Earth life 300 years ago, but has continued to learn and evolve in the spirit world. And now he comes to share his wisdom with us for our benefit. The White Cloud Group, whom he represents, were formed to bring us knowledge that will hopefully steer us toward a more peaceful and harmonious future. They are made up of all kinds of scientific minds and scholars from all walks of life. And the information helps us to bring understanding without a religious bias or political persuasion. And because we believe in everyone's right to their own views and beliefs. So this is what we're coming from. Nothing is slanted, but really basically spirit team want us to understand the mechanics of the universe, our spirit journey, and discuss everything that we've been programmed to believe and hopefully emerge with a fresh point of view that is more applicable to life now. Maybe you will emerge with the same view, and that's absolutely fine. It's just knowledge is for sharing, and this is a very powerful thing. So thank heavens for BBS Radio, really. That's all I say. Okay, well, I do believe Gregory's with us now.
Hello, my dear friend, little bird. Hello, one and all. Particularly, of course, to Mr. Don Newsom and all of the little Newsoms that happen to be living with him, great and small.
Pattering of feet.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we have listeners' questions, and last week we finished off sort of partway through a question, didn't we, from Sophia in the UK about trees.
Yes, that's right.
Basically, she wanted to know what you could tell us about the secret life of trees, you know, about are they multidimensional like we are, and what way can they be considered conscious, and if there's anything that you can explain to us about trees from your perspective, that would be fantastic. And she even says that she's read that our ancestors could ask trees to protect their homes and children. So, I mean, that's probably folklore, but it's a lovely thought. And I think the point is that everybody gets this wonderful, wonderful spiritually strong protective feeling from trees.
Yes, and I suspect, my dear friend, that if you ask the people of the Amazon rainforest or some other place whereby indigenous peoples live amongst trees, you would find that they actually feel akin with them, as though they are their parents, really.
Oh, that's nice.
And that in actual fact, what tends to happen is that all beings who then live there, in a sense, do their very best to help trees to procreate, to help trees to continue their life existence, because they are the most valuable assets they have. Not just because they provide cover, but for all of the many, many hundreds of thousands of beings that live within them, which then, of course, becomes their food basket, in a sense. So in this respect, they have a different kind of whole air of harmonic that is derived from their well-being simply by living amongst the forest itself. You might say that in many respects that various indigenous peoples would actually have it of themselves that they feel very protected and protective over their beautiful forest. It's a part of the reason why, in actual fact, in later times of our observations of what humanity is doing at this present time, that simply means that these peoples are still trying to protect their forests, when in actual fact there are various companies who are trying their level best to level it for obvious gains of mineralization and various different kinds of situations like that. So I don't want to dwell on that too much, because it's an intensive negative, and what we have to look at within this respect is of the great protective state that trees have, really to do with enhancing the world upon which you live. And it is, of course, widely understood that if it were not for trees, perhaps then obviously the world in which you live would be a completely different place, not just because of their harmony. It's quite strange, really, that trees are able to create harmony even when they're asleep. Because in actual fact, if you walked in a forest or a wood that whereby all of the trees in it were asleep, apart from a few perhaps who were coniferous or something like that, but if you actually walked in a deciduous woodland, you would find that the energy of the place was in a sense quite different to how it would appear in the spring or summer. Nothing to do with the coloration of leaves and all the rest of it, to do with the imagery that you see. But in actual fact, if you were a blind person being in a woodland or forest when there were no leaves upon the trees, you too would feel the atmosphere of a different nature, in a sense, because the trees actually provide it. As I say, this is not just to do with the sensory awareness that human beings have when they perhaps experience the wind moving through the branches of the trees or through the leaves or something like that, and the actual movement that that creates. Nothing to do with that or the imagery that you see. It's really to do with the pure sensitivity that trees give off. So in a sense, part of the flavor that human beings gain from this is that it takes them back to their own sacred belonging, their sacred ascendancy, if you like. So what human beings have to come to understand is that areas where trees exist are actually very much sacred places, because they rewind, in a sense, your thought processes back into the ancestral times of living upon your planet. That is exactly the same as if you were on a moorland that's completely devoid of trees, but in actual fact that you become at one with the other natural elements that exist there. Grasses, in fact, have a level of consciousness too. So in that respect, you might say that all plants of living tissue have a certain kind of similarity and synergy with human beings, in that the mood of a human being when around plants oftentimes will change into a quietened state of heightened awareness, which means then that what's happening is that the tree's influence is changing your energy and your influence of your energy upon the whole pathway of how you observe the natural world in which you see. So it's nothing to do with, really, however, the imagery, but is to do with the tree's energy that comes from it. Now, trees themselves come from the sporatic group. This is a particular soul group where trees were initiated from. So that means to say then they have their own field of existence. They have their own shared identity. Trees respond to one another. They respond to one another particularly through being able to pick up not just pheromonic activity from one another. And this is across species. It's not something that happens just from one identity of species and then they can't make communication with anyone else. Contrary to humankind, just simply because they've lost it, in a sense, of their own belonging and their own knowing of communication, ultra-communication, in a sense, what happens with trees is that they are able to communicate in forms of not words, but in forms of feeling, in forms of like as though they pass transient behavior from one to another. So you, as a human being, might quite like to run experiments to do with this, perhaps using, as I have said before, various kinds of electrodes attached to the leaves of trees or any other plant indeed. In fact, almost any kind of living tissue organism that is of this kind and nature that comes through from the spirit world. So it means to say that in this respect, when you have some kind of communication happening or some kind of attitude from one being to another, it is transferred in through trees, and they share it with one another. So it's like when you are walking in a wood, and if you're a person who is hacking away at this and that, the trees are all sharing the knowledge of what you're doing. That doesn't mean to say they can get out of the way, of course, because they're rooted to the spot. But what it does mean to say is that they pass on the information so that others will actually be aware of it. Now, In saying this, my dear friend, it's quite possible for human beings to run experiments using sound, using orchestral sound, different sorts of sounds, perhaps flute noises or stringed instruments or many different kinds of instruments will actually help trees to respond to them. Exactly the same as they will respond to a person's breath and voice. The timbre of your voice will be something that trees will respond to. It's not an old wives' tale, incidentally, that people, when they talk to their plants, that they think that they respond to them. They actually do respond to them.
Mm. And, of course, the fairy tend to the trees as well, don't they?
Yes, and particularly, of course, those who have, in a sense, used various kinds of vegetation in order to continue their kind.
Would you like to explain that?
Well, yes. So what can happen with various different groups of fairy, I'm not going to go into this too deeply, but various different groups of fairy, they actually, what they do is they, when they get together, in a sense, to bring about perhaps another of their kind, then what happens is they may well do this just through initiating breath from one to the other, or that they share breath into perhaps a group of leaves or a flower or plant.
Oh, I see.
And then what they do is that energy is captured within the plant itself and then is sealed by the fairy in order for the gestation period to take place so that more fairy can become born of the half-life, if you like. Mm. It's not full physical life because they are not seen except when they want to be seen.
Mm. Yeah, I see. And we're doing a fairy book, so
yes.
It'd be pointless going into too much
detail.
Yes,
because there are so many different kinds and species of fairy that there are only some that do this, that others are from different walks of life. Others are coming from different cell mutations and different species.
Mm.
So but there are a certain group of fairy who actually use and are at one with various different plant organics on your side of life, who then utilize them for the purposes of this procreation, you see?
Absolutely.
And so that means to say that also what tends to happen is that various different groups of fairy then help the whole synergy of life upon the natural world to take place. So, for example, when you wonder why it is that deer have a certain route upon a certain place or whatever, or various other kinds of migratory animals, they actually do this not just by stars and by their pathway of patterning that has been integrated into them through the teaching methods of their parents and that kind of thing. We're also honouring the fact that for many of them, it will be fairy who will take on the role, in a sense, of helping them to move from one place to another, particularly if it's a cyclical event that happens at various times of the year or that kind of thing. We are also, of course, aware of how much various different animals help to share in the abundance of various different kinds of plants and the very fact that these are then shared right across the planet.
We really have to stop thinking that being a part of the Earth is somehow lesser, don't we? I mean, that's...
Oh, yes, absolutely so. It's ridiculous.
Mm, mm.
Yes.
But,
like as though you are not an ascended being if you think in terms of the Earth world.
Mm, absolutely.
Which is quite ridiculous.
Yeah. And
dishonouring, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gregory, when you passed to the spirit world, you saw the trees' auras for the first time. Can you explain to everybody what they are like?
Yes, absolutely so. Now, bearing in mind, dear friend, that I passed on the 13th of November, so that means to say that at that time there were no leaves upon the trees. In actual fact, the time of year at that on that particular year of 1723 was that there was a violent storm that night, and was probably one of the wettest times in living memory at that time of life. And in actual fact, what happened was, after I passed, I observed the following day that when the sun rose, that what happened was I saw, looking to the east, that not the reflection of the aura of the sun, but that what happened was it was illuminating the trees in a different way. Because I was hovering at around about 35 feet from the ground, I suppose, that what actually happened was I began to witness not the sun's rays upon the trees, but their very own energy, which was a kind of rainbow-like effect, not of all colours, but of a sort of a very delicate pink to violet hue. And that even though these trees had lost all of their leaves, shed all their leaves, and were, to all intents and purposes, asleep, what I witnessed was that for every single tree there was an aura of this beautiful lilac pink, almost, they varied from one to another. It was the most beautiful sequence of events I had ever witnessed. And as I say, it was not present just because the sun was rising at that time, but purely and simply, it was their own energy that was coming from it. And I felt very comforted by that, but also in a sense of wonder. Really, I couldn't quite understand why I hadn't seen such a thing before. Now, I understood at that time that there was something that had happened, because I wouldn't normally be 35 feet off the ground or so. So I knew that there was some event that had happened that meant that I couldn't will myself to be on the ground. I couldn't, in a sense, walk like I would have, you see,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. So it was quite strange, really. And also, of course, looking at the remains of my physical body, dismembered as it was, that in a sense, as well, didn't really hold any fear for me or anything like that, because I was just so marveled at the trees and what I was looking at. And of course, the moisture upon the branches and how it glistened within the sunlight was really quite extraordinary.
Yes, well, I can understand that, because even though you had realized that, you know, you had, in all intents and purposes, died, but that you, because you could see this, then you obviously were sort of questioning yourself about,
yes.
Well, how can I see this then?
Well, yes, absolutely, seeing as my head was in the rut in the road as well. So
exactly, exactly.
It didn't quite add up, you see. Mm. But I wasn't really putting everything together in that way.
Yeah.
I wasn't fearful, but I hadn't equated with the fact of the body that was lying there.
Absolutely,
you see?
Bit of a shock.
Because I was so taken with the trees and the auras and everything that I saw, and it was as though, as well, that there was no passage of time. I mean to say that before I knew it, the sun was going down again to the west, and that to the southwest, and that the whole situation gradually changed, and then it moved through the night, and I witnessed the various animals that were scurrying around the place, you see.
So could you see in the dark?
Yes, absolutely so. But it was quite strange, because it was like a half light, really.
Mm.
The tendency was, in fact, there wasn't a moon that night.
Mm.
So it should have been very dark, but and yet I could see everything. So it was quite strange, really. I didn't really, in a sense, even looking back in hindsight, it's like that part of the memory seems to be undiscovered, really. There are parts of it that I haven't really dwelt on that much, because it didn't really seem necessary.
Well, no, it probably still doesn't, really.
No, not really.
It's very interesting to us, obviously, to get first-hand how it happened. Anyway.
Yes, and also, of course, I have been present when other people have passed in order to help them let go of their physical body, in a sense. In that respect, I have managed to being able to be much more reassuring, I suppose, about the journey that they were to face, you see. Mm.
Yeah.
And also, in a sense, then point out the various different things that they may have been witnessing at that time. I'm not saying that I got into their minds or anything like that. I'm just saying that in a way of helping in order to bring healing of an instantaneous nature, so that they were not frightened or feel that this was like an adversarial condition.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. Okay, the other thing I would like to cover to do with trees as well,
yes,
is, I think, I'm not sure if we touched on it slightly last week, but basically about the buildings that can be made of them in the spirit world, and
yes,
instruments and different, well,
yes,
anything, furniture, I guess,
yes, yes,
anything that
yes,
you could make with trees, because don't you have to ask the trees permission?
Yes, that's right. We ask the trees permission for some cells. Now, this means to say that, in a sense, that the tree itself gives up some cells, which, remembering that the spirit world is non-physical, but what we do is that we create from the cells different kinds of situations, different kinds of, it's how that furniture may be produced, not just from the mind of the intention of the person, the spirit traveler, who creates it, but actually as a general situation. Otherwise, if it is that, for those of you listening to this, that you ever wondered why it is that perhaps loved ones report to being able to be taken to dwellings and that kind of thing, that's how they're built. They're built either through the cell memory of rock or stone or some such thing of the planet of Earth, or from the cell memory or formation of cells of trees of many different kinds and varieties, which are then utilized and grown specifically to be used to create structures which are then always growing. So in a sense, to accommodate the further and further expansion of the spirit world. That doesn't mean to say that it started off with nothing. It means that, in a sense, the expansion has been continuous.
Is it always growing or always alive?
Yes, always growing, always alive. That's right. And in exactly the same way that we find that many different beings will actually be perhaps using their mind memory, their consciousness, in order to evoke memories of illumination through imagery, we are also able to do that and enhance that because, for example, the whole situation of plants and flowers and various different other beings in the spirit world who previously in their physical life never had the ability to consciously use verbal language, that are now in our side of life able to do just that, because language is not a barrier. Because in actual fact, thoughts really are living things, and what happens in the spirit world is that beings such as trees and various different plants and flowers are able to talk just as well as human beings or animals.
Do they have an opinion?
Well, they have opinion in a sense of, for example, if it's a matter of one being's behavior, like, for example, a cow, then would it still be grazing upon grasses and that kind of thing? Would deer still be grazing? Yes, absolutely. So would your horsey, you see.
Mm.
Various different other things, because it's part of their cell memory. It's exactly the same reason as to how it is that all animals will in the spirit world, be able to feed, but not on the same things. They would be able to feed on vegetation with their permission, you see?
Yes.
But not on one another.
Yes.
That's not to say that vegetation is a lesser being. It's to say, however, that vegetation of a physical world always appears to give its allegiance to helping those of non-vegetative state to live out their existence, however that is expressed. Don't forget that these are only transient times for spirit. It's only for the time and duration of whilst it is that the spirit traveller, having had a physical existence, is becoming more used to its spirit state. And so gradually it will be that the envelopes, if you like, of memory that were created and dwelt upon in physical life and brought with that being back into the spirit world will gradually be abandoned. And that's part of the reason why it is that for all beings, when you are relating to something of your ancestry that is to do with blood type and physical form, in a sense, of memory, you are then, in a sense, limiting yourself into your expression of what you understand your memory to be. Because that is not something which is attributable, if you like, when your spirit is much more free of your conscious living tissue memory and the cell structure that was around it. Because you then become more of a being that is the spirit of the universe, you see, like you were before you had a physical life.
Okay, well then I'm going to go on to the next question, actually.
Yes,
this
yes.
is from Zofia as well.
Yes.
I have many questions from Zofia, and I thank you very much, because it fits nicely moving on from the last one.
Yes, yes.
To do with the spirit world, but she says, ego seems to be something beyond simply sense of self-awareness. On Earth, is the ego unique to humans, and is this something souls specifically incarnate to experience?
Yes, it's an interesting point.
Do we carry this ego to the spirit world, or do we simply remember this experience?
Yes, it depends upon which part of ego you're talking about, Sophia. Because in actual fact, there is a percentage of what human beings determine as ego, which is really to do with instinctive behavior. That is, for example, when you see various traits of various living tissue organisms and how they respond to their natural physical life. Some of this is coming about being illuminated through ego, not in ego in the way of I am, but in respect of instinctive survival. Ego, you see, actually plays different points of view, different pathways for your physical life journey. So it means to say that at times when you are thinking in terms of ego, you aren't. You're actually thinking about life skill, about your survival, about your maintaining your genetic state or that of your ancestry. So that's like a different form of your egotistical journey. When you are thinking about ego, you're not thinking about necessarily the pathway of consciousness as in respect of what you can or cannot do in respect of behavior or morality, or what you can or cannot do in respect of other beings' feelings or desires. So what we see then, when human beings actually try to unpick the encrusted ego, that is part of it, is a valued state. Not a lesson, not at all, but a valued state of understanding instinctive behavior. And part of that is attributable to that. That's not to say, friend, that when you see bullies in the street or when you see the kinds of situations of violence at football matches or whatever else it is that's ailing your side of life at this time, we notice that human beings, in a sense, suffer from aberrations of ego, like as though their instinctive behavior is marshaled by it, but for some obscure reason, the polemics of the way, that is, polemics are the way in which the structure of energy is created in the physical life pathway. So the polemics of what you are initiating in your physical life sometimes become unhinged because of various physical or chemical natures. For example, when a human being perhaps becomes feeling as though they are like as though they are moving through a survival mode which is amplified beyond reason. So it's like human beings create polemics which are to do with enforced behavior that are, in a sense, started out to being instinctive, but then what happened was that the ego took place and took over the ordinary polemics of what you would expect instinctive behavior to portray, which means that the human behavior acts outside of itself and becomes completely unfettered, almost as though that's part of the reason why some people suddenly go into rages of violence. You see?
Gosh. Can you give us an example of that sort of situation? I think all sorts of things are going through my mind.
Yes.
And other people too.
Yes, absolutely so. For example, then, you may have a person, let's say we have, I'm not doing this as typecasting males or anything like that. This is just purely, this could work either way, male or female. Mm-hmm. So very well, you have a male, who decides that he wants to take advantage of a woman. And what happens is that he begins to take this advantage by over-asserting his own strength and violence over. And that begets more violence because of the then situation which has taken over from the ordinary polemics of the state of it, which should be that the energy is simply that of instinctive behavior, which is I have won over this this conquest in order to procure my genetics, you see? But instead of happening, what happens with this situation is that from time to time you can have organic situations where by it sets off a pheromonic trigger, which then initiates a different kind of egocentric behavior, which instead of being typified by the ordinary polemics of the situation through instinctive state, it will create a variance of it. And so what you see is that instead of the person doing that, they actually become so violent that they kill the person. You see?
Yes.
And usually this is a state of rage or enragement that they become completely unhinged and will grasp the first object that they can find. Usually this kind of behavior is not stereotypically already organized. In other words, they're not carrying a knife. But what would happen would be that they would simply get a brick or a blunt object, anything, you see?
Mm. Yeah, okay, yeah, I see.
Mm. So in that respect, what we are seeing in that respect is a different way of animalistic behavior. It's not animalistic at all. It's something whereby the polemics have been completely subdued from ordinary instinctive behavior and ego has in fact taken place over it. And then what we see is the last vestiges of mind are lost. And it's simply given over to not even a tribal stance, but a stance of, in a sense, completely aberrant behavior. Lack no feeling, no conscious emotion, emotionless, in fact.
Okay, but it does follow, doesn't it, the more that you get the ego works for you, then the more egotistical people get.
Basically. Yes, that's very true. Absolutely so, because they then become used to the pheromonic activity which is illuminated by the egotistical behavior. But that's not instinctive egotism.
No, but it is also because it works for them. I don't mean in a violent way. I mean maybe in a successful way.
Oh, yes, absolutely so. So there are various pathways whereby you can utilize this as a way of pumping adrenaline through your body, to give you different forms of energy so that you can cope under stressful situations. So this is a different kind of knock-on variant from it, I suppose, if you
Well,
like.
Yes, and it's because, you know, it's part of the fight or flight then, isn't it, I guess?
Yes, that's right.
So there's various different types of ego, basically.
Yes, there are. Absolutely so. So you cannot actually just use one blanket term ego. Many spiritually minded people are very much utilizing this ego as though it's something that they're going to lose gradually. Well, if you lost it completely, you would not survive. You would simply pass away.
Mm. Yes. So part of the question is, on Earth, is the ego unique to humans, and is this something souls specifically incarnate to experience?
No, it is not unique to human beings. It is something that's a part of the endemic tree of life, in a sense, whereby ego exists in parts of the pathway of instinctive behavior, as I have just illuminated. So that means to say that other animals also have a sense and agent provocateur of ego. Like, for example, you will see a situation, let's see, yes, I can create it by this. You would have a family of swallows, and they nest in a barn. The mother and father swallow are there having a happy time in their natured and nurtured and secure environment as they farm for flies in order to continue their race. So it's a very endemic and harmonic existence in that respect. Then what you have is that during that time there becomes another swallow who is a patriarch of the group. This is little realized, but in actual fact, flocks of birds have a patriarch or a matriarch, depending upon their whole unit. And depending, that's not to say that this is something whereby when you see a flock, there's only ever one leader. That's not to say that at all. But what happens is that there is always either a patriarch or a matriarch within the flock whereby everyone else follows. That being, they don't have to be in the lead of the pack, but what happens is that they are somehow manipulative throughout the pack. And what happens is, from time to time, you will see that the patriarch of a swallow unit will suddenly burst in upon this happy little family group and will actually take it upon himself to assault the female, to usurp the other male's virtue. That is a form of instinctive ego that exists in animals, in a sense, to make it be known that their superiority of genetics cannot be fought over, but is something that they just simply have to take as a matter of course.
Gosh, I think I've seen that happen. Actually,
yes, yeah. And so that's in a sense part of the reason, so that you would identify with it, so you would understand, you see.
Yes.
And you will have a similar situation, you will have a similar situation with flocks of gannets or gulls or whatever, when they're nesting in their nesting sites. Their sites are very particular. That means that they have a certain amount of ego which is directing them to help and enhance their life so that their instinctive behavior can be seen all the way through it to enable them to continue to procreate their genetic ancestors.
Yes, because, I mean, animals do prove their authority and their rank by demonstration and posturing.
Yes, that's
don't
right.
They?
Absolutely. Dogs do it all the time.
And horses.
Yes, yes. Most. Absolutely.
So that is just another way of doing that, really, isn't it?
Yes, even butterflies.
Really?
Yes.
See, we think they're so innocent, don't we?
Yes, and bugs do it too. Because bugs have relationships, the same as butterflies have relationships. So, in a sense, what you see is, if it's not that bug's actual mate, you will find that, and you can, of course, talk to your wonderful friend Paul about this. But you will actually find that bugs actually mate in a very instrumentive way, so that it's actually a very consecrated, like, act. You see?
Okay, right. Well, moving on to the last part of Sophia's question.
Yes, yes.
Do we carry this ego to the spirit world, or do we simply remember the experience?
Well, some do. Some do carry it. As I say, parts of ego are there as a part of the instrument of instinct. So it enables you as a physical being to survive your planet. Otherwise, without it, you wouldn't. You just roll over and pass away. You would just allow other animals to take your food. You would allow, you see? That's, in a sense, many human beings confuse this with instinctive behavior. Although the dogs would quarrel over the bones of an animal they've killed or whatever. They would quarrel and use the pecking order in order to understand what their position is in the pack. Yes, but it's also ego that allows, that carries this through, in a sense.
Mm.
So ego isn't always a bad thing. Human beings have tended to label ego as being a negative instrument. It isn't.
Yes, it's somehow not a fitting word for your description, although we know what you mean, but it's like it shouldn't be used in that way for the survival situation.
No, that's right.
You know
right.
what I mean? But
that's
yeah, it's right. a branch of ego, and
yes.
there is a fine line, I guess, isn't
yes,
there? And
yes.
It's individual.
Yes, and so part of the situation will become that instinctive behavior plays a part in ego, in that where the line of ego, I must do this, doesn't think of what I look like when I'm doing this. Yes?
Yes.
Because it's instinctive. So it's just when a hedgehog finds a worm or a snail that it wants to eat, it's not thinking, how am I going to best take this snail or this worm so that it feels less pain. Yes?
Absolutely.
It doesn't think in terms of that. It's just instinct.
Mm. But we need it for, like, for instance, if somebody's a really good artist.
Yes.
They need some form of ego to actually say, look, world, I can...
And to display it.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I can
Otherwise,
do.
Otherwise, you would never see anything.
No.
You would never hear an instrument. You would never hear one single idea. That is ego that drives that. That's not to say, I understand, that ego is not a bad thing. Without it, you would be like a Buddhist monk and never speak, ever.
Mm. Yes, because, for instance, you know, BBS Radio is, you know, wants to be, and of course is, the best online radio station on the planet. To do that, to keep that status and that focus and that goal and drive,
yes.
you have to have a certain amount of ego to try and stay at the top.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, absolutely not.
The
it's
ego
creative.
is the driving force. Yes.
Isn't it? It's being
absolutely
creative.
So
ego and creative, the creative side of people is very much linked.
Ego is the instrument of creativity.
Mm.
Without it, you wouldn't bother.
Mm.
You see? So it's like, try not to think in terms of the instrument of mind is... then the foul part of it is that it's driven by ego. No, it's not. It's the kind of ego that comes out that is foul.
Yes, and yes. also...
Or is instrumental and beautiful.
Yes, yes. And what you do find, don't you, with people who actually do go over the top with the ego, you know, although they might have a wonderful gift or be very good
yes,
at something
yes.
or whatever,
yes.
they go that one step further. And then they haven't got an open mind anymore because they don't think that they can learn anymore.
But that then goes into the area of the C word, which is conceit.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
And which then begats a few other words like avarice and, yes.
Yes.
And selfishness and all of those things.
Yes.
You see?
So it's within, you have to feel it within you then, the line,
that's
the
right.
fine line, because obviously you have to be able to sell yourself whatever it is to
yes.
actually get on in this life.
Yes, and so then it means to say then how you perform in your own purity, how you regard this purity is then a matter of your judgment, which only comes, in a sense, from your state of learning. What is right and wrong? What is your morality code? How do you create respect from trees, not with a chainsaw? And yet, for some people, they might have to actually do that in order to manage a forest or a dwelling place to enable it to function in a very real way. Otherwise, it might be that it becomes diseased. So in order for a situation, even of trees, to be kept in harmony, sometimes you will have a person who will take down various trees simply because they have become diseased and are untreatable.
So when we go to the spirit world, how does this ego feel to us when we look back and remember the experience? Because
yes,
obviously this is our learning experience.
Yes.
This is, you know, this is everything that we do here is something that's going to be added to our little repertoire.
That's right.
Of knowledge.
Yes, so then what you would look at is in exactly the same way as you would now. If you sat for a moment and thought about the things that you did as a child, or the incidents or events that overtook you and that you responded to, not unkindly, but out of your character, something just popped out that you didn't expect, you see, because you simply reacted to the moment. That doesn't mean to say that it was ego-driven. What it means is it was instinctively driven. So you were acting out of something which was not because you were trying to create effect, but simply you reacted to effect, with effect. Yes?
Yes.
To effect and with effect. That means to say that those kinds of memories are not going to be tainted with this little glass bottle called ego. They are going to be, in a sense, part of the learning condition, as they would be right now if you cast your memory into that as a way of skimming a pebble across a lake. Then what you will see is, in a sense, the energy coming from those conditions, not negatively, because they are not driven by ego. The ones that are driven by ego sometimes are made in error, because perhaps maybe you were a child who was then going into adolescence and then the beginnings of adulthood, whereby there are all of these different chemical reactions and various different things going through your body, so you wouldn't necessarily have your own state of mind. As I understand, very many people have, when they're moving through the physical world at the certain times or periods of their life, when the whole branch of what's happening to them pheromonically and chemically is that it brings about all of these different kinds of situations that whilst being an adult, you would rather forget.
Absolutely, yes. And the thing is, the more you develop your spiritual awareness and open up to your spiritual pathway, then you can say the most innocent things, but it sounds like ego. And you think, echoes in your mind.
Yes,
you can feel it in your solar plexus.
Yes,
you think, no, hope they don't, hope that doesn't come across.
I didn't mean it like that.
Absolutely.
Yes,
I mean, it's painful.
So. Yes, absolutely.
So it's difficult.
But that, in a sense, is also, you see, because you are fighting with it because you don't realize that maybe part of it might have been instinctive behavior, that you just responded to someone else's unkind remark or someone else's
energy,
activity.
Just their energy.
Just their energy, yes.
If they're a negative person.
Yes.
That's the other
absolutely
thing.
Absolutely so.
We have to think about how we do react and with different people and how certain people bring the best out in us. And
others the worst.
The worst, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and we do, let's face it, we do all have the ability to turn and defend ourselves and that sort of thing.
Yes,
no matter how loving and all-encompassing we are.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm. And you have to have that because that's what living in a physical life is.
Mm.
And the instinctive part of ego enables that to happen because it plays a part of your pathway of survival.
Yeah.
So, my dear friend, Sophia, do not think that this then is something that you cannot or should not take with you. It was part of your survival apparatus that enabled you to have a physical life. You see? And what gradually happens is that these energies and methodologies are understood. That doesn't mean to say, dear friend, that you can then run amok in your physical life and be crazed with egotistical values or whatever. You don't have to do that, because there's enough of it going on anyway in your physical life without you worrying too much about every little detail of your conscious state.
Well, yes, and the thing is, obviously, you know, we have to learn to love ourselves, and that isn't ego either. And
no, it isn't.
It's something we have to do in order to heal ourselves, really, and to survive in this world.
Yes, and particularly, little bird, to heal from all of the negativity that other people have put upon you, saying that you're this or you're that. They don't know you.
Yeah.
So how can they possibly say that?
Yeah.
And these are usually the paths of your pathway whereby you feel torn and ragged, raped and violated, in a sense, by other people who, in a sense, put condescension before understanding.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. We've got plenty more questions for next week.
Yes, well, very well then. God bless upon your journey, little bird. Thank you so, everyone. God bless. Be well. Be happy.
Thank you, Gregory. We hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again. That is www.spirit-teaching.com. You can have an Akashic reading with Gregory. Have a look at our Akashic readings page. There's so much information on our website. There's lots of downloads. They're all educational situations that the White Cloud Group have brought for us. And thank you so much for listening today. My name is Sylvie Avery. This has been Spirit's Work on the wonderful bbsradio.com. Until next time, be peaceful, be positive and focused on your goal, knowing you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.